Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Water Cooler, everybody. I'm David Brody. Thanks for joining us. It's Wednesday, March 17, 2021. And since our show yesterday, roughly 5,000 people have entered America illegally. That's just in the last 24 hours. It's a crisis with no end in sight. Now, you would think President Biden, after his daily nap and omega-3 pills, would be rushing down to the border, right? I mean, at least for the photo op of a president in action, right? No dice.
Not at the moment.
Not at the moment. Joe's not going anywhere, and House Democrats are no better. You would think now would be the time to get tough on border security, right? Or pass some emergency measures to strengthen the border. Of course not. Silly me. Instead, this week, Nancy and the Dems are going to vote, and yes, pass, the American Dream and Promise Act. It would create a path to citizenship for dreamers. Now, you can just pretty much dream on, Nancy, because that legislation doesn't have a chance in the Senate, especially while there's a major immigration crisis at the border. Democrats are also planning on passing the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which would establish a path to legal status for immigrant agriculture workers. All right, so just to recap here, you have illegal immigration out of control at the border, and Democrats are passing bills to make more illegal immigrants legal. Folks, the world's upside down right about now. So here's what's really going on. Biden and the Democrats want illegal immigrants in this country for various reasons, chief among them, voting. Let illegals in, win all future national elections, change America into a socialist utopia. That's it in a nutshell. And let's be clear, they're coming to America not to find a bride like Eddie Murphy. They're coming here because Biden has promised them unlimited benefits, a better life, a get out of South America free card. The other day, the administration's southern border coordinator or uncoordinator admitted as much.
Surges tend to respond to hope. And there was a significant hope for a more humane policy after 4 years of, you know, pent up demand. So I don't know whether I would call that a coincidence, but I certainly think that the idea that a more humane policy would be in place may have driven people to make that decision.
Folks, as Biden would say, here's the deal. Biden has literally said that if you are in this country illegally and you get arrested by police, don't worry about it. I mean, seriously, here's what he said during the 2020 presidential race.
Should undocumented immigrants arrested by local police be turned over to immigration officials?
No.
All right, so that was then. And this is now. Biden sat down with his buddy George Stephanopoulos in an interview with ABC last night. Now he's reluctantly telling illegal immigrants to not come to America. Unbelievable. Watch this.
A lot of the migrants coming in saying they're coming in because you promised to make things better. It seems to be getting worse by the day. Was it a mistake not to anticipate this surge?
Well, first of all, there was a surge the last 2 years in 19 and 20, there was a surge as well.
This one might be worse.
No, well, it could be, but here's the deal. We're sending back people to, first of all, the idea that Joe Biden said come, because I heard the other day that they're coming because they know I'm a nice guy and I won't do
they're
what Trump did.
They're saying this.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. They're not.
Do you have to say quite clearly, don't come?
Yes, I can say quite clearly, don't come. And what we're in the process of getting set up, don't leave your town or city or community.
Don't come. Give me a break. Like, the folks south of the border are going to listen to that mumbo jumbo. Look, that's like me telling you, hey, don't watch the show. Don't come and watch the show. But by the way, if you do, I'll give you $500 and a signed water cooler poster. And of course you'd come watch the show. Not for the signed poster, of course, but you get the drift. Oh, and here's something else. You know what? This reminds me of President Obama. Back in the day, he said the exact same thing to George Stephanopoulos, his buddy, when he had his immigration crisis.
So is your message, don't come?
Oh, our message absolutely is don't send your children unaccompanied on trains or through a bunch of smugglers. That is our direct message to the families in Central America. Do not send your children to the border.
See, folks, look, both Obama and Biden say don't come, but the problem is actions speak louder than words, and that's why they come. Donald Trump, on the other hand, implemented the anti-Field of Dreams strategy, and he said, if I build the wall, they will not come. And guess what? He was right. All right, I want to bring in our first guest. Back with us this week, Russ Vogt, president of the Center for American Restoration and the former budget director for the Trump administration. Russ, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Look, Russ, the Biden administration literally stopped construction of the border wall. I think it was like day one or two of his administration. You were the main guy making sure it got funded. So what's happening here exactly, Russ?
It's very troubling. They are taking money that was appropriated by Congress, and they are essentially saying that we have no intention of spending it as it was appropriated by Congress, and they can't do that. And you're seeing some of the members in the Senate begin to rise up and say that that's a violation of the law. And so this was specifically earmarked for the wall, with a specific earmark for the type of barrier that it's meant to be spent on, i.e. the wall as built and conceived by the President of the United States. And so this is really troubling. They're upsetting the situation on the border. They've created a wholesale crisis. And what's interesting about the last clip that you showed is that it was President Obama admitting what Democrats have denied recently, which is this is a human trafficking problem. This is a human smuggling issue. And that to the extent that you have magnets and neon lights across the border that say, come to this country, you're putting people's lives in danger. You're putting kids' lives in danger. And it's a real problem.
Russ, help me out. I want to circle back. In essence, you're saying what the Biden administration did on wall funding was a violation of the law. I want to understand that, not to wonk out and geek out on national television, but kind of explain exactly what the violation is so I understand exactly and our viewers understand what you're talking about here.
Yeah, long term, if they just decide we're not going to spend the money that was appropriated by Congress for the wall, that's a violation of the Impoundment Control Act that says that you can't just impound funding. Now, they can take they can do a little bit of a policy review, and right now they're in the midst of that policy review. They can do that. But if they say, we're not gonna spend this money on a border barrier, that is unlawful. And it's very likely that there will be additional voices that come and make that point because of the same rationale that they used against the Trump administration at times. And we were within the bounds of our authority, but folks in Congress took a different view. And in this respect, the case is much more stronger that this administration is violating the law.
So, Russ, talk to me about some of these bills this week that are going to go forward in the House. Nancy and the Dems, they're going to put it through this Dreamers Act, and they're also going to put through what this Modernization Act as it relates to illegal immigrant farmers to have them become legal. What's your take on those bills?
There are two additional amnesty bills that would put more magnets into current law to attract illegal immigration. And it does nothing to fix the problem in the border. And what it attempts to do is to say, what's the most politically attractive way that we can provide amnesty for kids and for farm workers? Both accomplish a different political calculus. We want to get these bills moving to the Senate in their minds, so that we have an opportunity to attach something that might get 60 votes in the Senate and break a filibuster. That is the problem this week. We can't have House Republicans joining on to these bills this week because they are amnesty and they will lead to significant detriment at the border.
Russ, what's the future here on immigration? We talk every year, every 4 years, and quite frankly, we've been talking forever. Since Reagan put in that, I know there's controversy with that as it relates to amnesty there. But where is this going? And from a Center for American Restoration standpoint, what's the goal here? I mean, Republicans and conservatives have kind of been labeled by the media, the liberal media, as kind of anti-immigrant. You don't have any compassion. What's the solution here specifically?
Well, politically, President Trump's numbers with Hispanics improved dramatically in the last election. So yeah. I actually don't think there's a political issue there with regard to good, sound border security policies. And for the first time in decades, we had an administration that understood what it was required to get a handle on our border. And we put into policies that were very precarious. They're precarious because current law doesn't give you a lot of flexibilities to deal with some of these magnets. But we came up with policies, one or two or three big items that allowed us to get a handle on the surge. And as a result, you have these people in the administration that are philosophically, they cannot go and adopt the good policies that were in effect not so long ago. And as a result, we have people who are on the terror watch list coming across the border. And so, look, the future, we have proved in the last 4 years, we have policies that can accomplish this. This new administration has to wake up and realize and adopt what we put into place.
As we wrap up here, Russ, when we hear the words "don't come" by Joe Biden, "don't come" by Barack Obama, is that an outright lie, or are they just basically, that's code for don't come so quickly. We want you to come in illegally, but, you know, just you're creating a PR problem for us.
I think it's probably a little bit of both, and I would lean towards the latter. I mean, I loved your analogy. It would be if I put out a public service announcement that says, I'm going on vacation and my house is unlocked, but I really don't want you to steal anything from my house.
Right.
That doesn't make sense in the real world.
That's a good point. Your house is secure, I hope, Russ, by the way, on a separate note, but hope that is the case. All right, Russ Vogt, really appreciate your time here. Thank you so much.
You bet.
All right, Russ Vogt, president of the Center for American Restoration. And what's interesting is, let's be clear. I mean, Russ knows his numbers. Russ obviously ran, he was the Trump's budget director at the time. But let's also remember this. He's a culture warrior as well. And what do I mean by that? I know Democrats and liberals get all crazy. Culture warrior, oh my gosh. No, look, all that means, it's very, very simple. This country was based on Judeo-Christian principles. And to want to have those traditional Judeo-Christian principles followed from a moral perspective is, wait for it, everybody, not a bad thing. Not too controversial. We're back in a moment.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to the water cooler. Hey, folks, yesterday in the program, we talked about Democrats in distress. We talked about Cuomo and Biden and Pelosi. And oh, yeah, right. Gavin Newsom out in California. How about this headline? He's waking up to this. California Democratic Governor Newsom worried, says the recall on him likely to qualify. That's right. Look, they need 1.5 million signatures. They've got over 2 million. I know they got to go through the verification process. We're going to talk about that right now. But I tell you what, let's get more information on that with Amanda Head, Real America's Voice correspondent out in Los Angeles. Amanda, great to see you.
Good to see you. Yes, I'm very excited. Today was the original deadline for 1.5 million signatures, as you stated in your opener. We are at over 2 million, and that provides for a couple hundred thousand more than the insulation that they initially wanted. They wanted to get 1.8 or 1.9 million to allow for signatures that would be obviously thrown out because they are scrutinizing these signatures. It's amazing. Just 4 months ago, Gavin Newsom refused to have the state of California verify signatures following the November election. So this time around, they really want to make sure that all these signatures are valid and that they match residential addresses. But I have some new numbers for you. Statewide, the signatures that were collected, over 2 million, 40% of the recall signatures, roughly 800,000 signatures, are from registered Democrats. A recent poll claims that Gavin Newsom has a 42% approval rating. Okay, sure. But in LA County, this is something that's really interesting. And even anecdotally, going to these recall events, you'll see many people who are not white. I would say that the vast majority of folks who are attending these are immigrants from other countries, people who, you know, Hispanic community, Black community folks. So in LA County, of the signatures collected within our county, 52.45% are from registered Democrats. 24.95% are unaffiliated and 17.15% are Republican. Now, Gavin came out and said that this is obviously people, you know, racist folks who oppose the browning of California. I find that interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen the Lego movie, but the theme song is "Everything is awesome." I think for Gavin, it's "Everything is racist." Everything that is happening with respect to this, he thinks is a far right wing, you know, these are all right wingers who are trying to oust him. But like I said, you look at the numbers in LA County, 52% are Democrat. And overall throughout the state of California, 40% of signatures came from Democrats. So if those people are right wing, then that's something new, I got to tell you.
Amanda, those are staggering numbers that you're sharing with us in a deep blue state. To have 40% of all Democrats, or excuse me, 40% of the signatures be Democrat, I mean, it just blows up Newsom's argument fully. And then, of course, you mentioned more than half now, 52% in LA County alone are Democrats. I mean, so what does this mean? I mean, Newsom is clearly worried about this. Where does it go from here specifically? Are we going to have to wait a while until these signatures are verified?
So we have been delivering these signatures to each county's precinct office all along. There's not some central hub in Sacramento where these go. It is per precinct. So we've been turning them in all along so as to give them ample time to collect them and not have any excuses. So they've been collecting and verifying them all along. I think the rejection rate is roughly 17%. So with over 2 million, we are well within that 1.5 million requirement. So what will happen is an election, a special election, will take place this fall. Unless Democrats get their way, Democrats are already trying to pull shenanigans. They're trying to delay this to the next regularly scheduled primary because they know that Democrats will turn out more for that election. But assuming it happens this fall, there will be two questions on the ballot. Number one, do you want to recall Gavin Newsom? And number two, who do you want to replace him? Now, here's the concern for Republicans and folks who support the recall. As many people on the ballot can be there. If you want to throw your hat in the ring, you can go for it. In 2003, when we recalled Gray Davis, there were 135 names on the ballot. Now, wow. You don't have to have a majority, just a plurality. So literally, whoever gets the most votes, it could be 15%, and that person wins.
Yeah, that's going to be potentially problematic for sure. So what's driving all of this? I mean, is it simple enough to say COVID and the dictatorial type style that he's had out there? Because you get into Democrats that are concerned. It seems like it's not just going to be the conservative line here about all of this. But look, if you're closing down pizza places and massage places and nail salons, and I mean, that affects Democrats and Republicans. I mean, I just wonder if it's just been too much for a lot of folks out there.
I mean, that has definitely been what has pushed this effort over the edge. I think by the end of COVID, they are estimating that 19,000 small businesses across California will close, never to reopen again. So that has definitely been the driving force behind the success of this recall effort. Now, this is the sixth time that we've tried to recall him. We obviously have a lot of problems here in California that have nothing to do with COVID. Housing crisis, you know, the rental prices and home prices are just absolutely through the roof. Crime in inner cities, homelessness in inner cities, and not even just inner cities, it's pretty much across California. We have water issues with water rights in the Central Valley, where pretty much all of our produce comes from. Gavin Newsom has tried to put the squeeze on them with water, which, as you know, trickle down. You can't grow vegetables and fruits and nuts, and then that screws the whole state. So there have been many reasons to recall Gavin Newsom, but yes, most recently, his measures for COVID. And, you know, he was one of the first governors to shut down his state with very stringent measures. He still has not lifted the measures statewide. He's placing us in specific tiers for requirements to reopen our counties. LA County just 2 days ago reopened indoor dining to 25%, indoor gyms 10%, museums, places like that. But I think the concern for a lot of people and for these Democrats is that they're starting to get the message, especially when you can compare the numbers with Florida, a state that for a lot of the pandemic has been wide open, and they're thinking to themselves, okay, we've got the same numbers as they do per 100,000 residents. So why did we have to shut down all of these businesses? Why did we have to dash the dreams of so many people? You know, California is such a melting pot of immigrants, and you've got people who moved here for the American dream that unfortunately has become the American nightmare because of measures from Gavin Newsom. So that's why I think a lot of them are supporting this.
Amanda Head, great information and insight. You're obviously out there. You live out there. You know what's going on, the lay of the land. We really appreciate the expert analysis from you. Thank you so much. By the way, I just want
to
say, let me just be clear. They can, if they're going
to
recall him, but don't recall his hair, because he's got good hair. There's nothing wrong with his hair. Just to you.
He does. He has great hair.
Okay. Confirming now, Amanda Head, David Brody saying Gavin Newsom, fine head of hair. Okay. But what's in the noggin? That is a whole different situation. All right, when we come back, more pro-life legislation across the country. We're going to talk with the executive director of the Human Coalition Action. He's going to talk about protecting moms. Back in a moment.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. You know, on this show, we've been talking a lot about pro-life bills all across the country, state by state, in essence, a whittling away of Roe v. Wade in many circumstances. There's some new legislation out there in Arkansas, Texas as well. It's called the Every Mom Matters Act. And let's put that, Every Mother Matters Act. And this is what it says. The legislation, in essence, creates a tangible system of support for women considering abortion, and it was created with the input of the Human Coalition Action. EMMA, obviously the name of the bill, ensures that an at-risk pregnant woman has a meaningful opportunity to learn about and access a variety of assistance when she needs it most. And as you might imagine, Planned Parenthood and the pro-choice movement are up in arms about bills like this. They're taking smelling salts probably as we speak. Let's bring in Dean Nelson right now, executive director of the Human Coalition Action. Dean, great to have you on the show.
David, thanks so much for being allowing me to be on. It's a great honor.
Well, talk to me a little bit about EMMA, this act and what it does. And it's in Arkansas, but I know Texas is also, has something along those similar lines as well. What's going on with this?
Yeah, well, thanks so much. So, yeah, the Every Mother Matters Act has been, it's a product of really a year of research that we've done at Human Coalition in Texas, where over the last decade, we have been an organization in the pro-life movement that has provided service to women who find themselves in an unplanned pregnancy. And so what we've done is we've taken a lot of that data and we figure that we can actually have meaningful legislation in states that help women with some of the challenges that they have regarding their pregnancy that feel like that abortion is their only option. And so essentially what it does is it requires any state where a woman is seeking to get an abortion for her to at least have a meaningful contact with someone that will at least let her know about all of the resources that are available to her so that she can make a healthy choice for herself and for her preborn child. 75% of women say who are seeking an abortion would say that if they had their circumstances different, they would choose to life for their unborn child.
Dean, this is right in the front lines of the culture war that we're seeing on the life issue. It's been going on for a very long time. You guys are, let's be honest, you're winning that war. I mean, even I know pro-abortion forces would argue with that, but it's very hard to argue against the evidence, especially with 4D ultrasounds and so much of the technology today. But Dean, talk to me a little bit about the pushback against this, because this in essence would what require folks like Planned Parenthood locally and others to make that information available somehow, require them to?
That's exactly right. And while this bill has bipartisan support, we have the support of some people that have not been vocal on the pro-life issue, like the National Hispanic Action Network, the Church of God in Christ, and other mainline Black denominations. Where they are concerned is that this is not a bill like a heartbeat bill that puts restrictions on abortion. This doesn't do any of that. This simply is making usually state funds that are already available, programs available to women. They just don't know about it. And so, of course, you know, the left and Planned Parenthood and their allies are just going, you know, apoplectic, because they're figuring out that we know how to really serve women, and particularly women from diverse and vulnerable backgrounds. And so they are now aware of it. I suspect the more that they hear about it, that they're going to challenge us. But even in Texas, just 2 days ago, again, it had bipartisan support, had a host of support from diverse coalitions. And we believe that this is going to make a huge difference in the lives of vulnerable women populations around the country.
Yeah, where are you on this movement, this kind of overall pro-life, pro-choice movement? There's been so many bills that are out there, not just this one, but obviously other ones we just saw the other day. The state, I'm trying to remember, was it Arkansas that passed that bill? The one without, yeah, that's right, Arkansas, passed abortion illegal without any exception, except for life of the mother. I mean, so where is this debate going specifically, Dean? Where do you anticipate this going?
Sure. Well, as you know, David, there are many different angles within the pro-life movement. We have tried to stay in our lane, one, providing the services for women, but two, Human Coalition over the last decade has made meaningful strategic partnerships with organizations like the Church of God in Christ, where we are engaging the culture, providing the services. And as we see more and more diversity within the pro-life movement, I believe that we will gain traction and ultimately see a huge shift in the messaging towards pro-life communities. But also, I believe that we'll see a shift in opinion regarding abortion in our country, just because of this type of legislation that doesn't seek to divide. It doesn't seek to put even restrictions, even though we're supportive of bills that have been passed that are heartbeat bills and that, but this basically does two things. It saves the lives of preborn children, but it also serves the women. And I believe that type of language is what's going to get us a shift in our culture regarding the issue of abortion.
So let me ask you real quick as we wrap up about, you know, Joe Biden's policies, obviously not pro-life whatsoever, especially as it relates to the baby in the womb. You would think that would not be a good thing for the pro-life movement, but maybe it's a blessing in disguise, because in essence, you'll get a lot more attention for these type of bills because of what the Biden administration is doing on their end. I'm wondering if it's a way to march it down the field as well.
We are certainly doing our very best to make people more aware of how egregious some of these things are. I mean, this past, a few days ago, he signed into law this $1.9 trillion, COVID relief package, which for the first time in 44 years did not have any kind of hide protections. And so the vast majority of Christians and even the majority of Americans do not want to see their taxpayer dollars used to fund abortion. So we're trying to take that message into, states like West Virginia, states like Pennsylvania, where they have quote unquote, more moderate senators, to help let people know that this is what this administration is doing.
Dean Nelson, appreciate your time here on the Water Cooler, the executive director of the Human Coalition Action. Thanks for all your time.
Bless you. Thanks
all
so
right.
much.
Dean Nelson with the official Bless You. And anytime you get the Bless You at the end, that's good. That's impressive. And I wasn't even sneezing. So that is even a better sign, FYI. By the way, the pro-life evangelicals for Biden, which insert laugh emoji with pro-life evangelicals for Biden, came out, of course, the other day. They were upset that the Hyde Amendment wasn't included in the $1.9 trillion stimulus bill. You know why it wasn't included? Because Joe Biden said he was not going to abide by the Hyde Amendment. Did they not watch the 2020 presidential election? We could do a segment on that. Let's do that. Rick Green next.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. Talking a lot about immigration on this show, and for good reason. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats doing their immigration bonanza bill marathon this week. Don't even get me started. I say don't even get me started. Should have heard me at the top of the show. Rewind that. You know what? Let's play that. No, let's not play that. Let's bring in Rick Green, shall we? A founder of PatriotAcademy.com. Rick, great to see you yet again. I don't mean yet again. I mean, you're here on the show. We love Rick Green. You're like cowbell to us.
I look forward to Wednesdays with you every week, man. Good to be with you.
All right. Well, that's great. Hey, so immigration, the Constitution. Your voice is an important one here in terms of what the Constitution, I'm going to use the word says on immigration, but kind of give me the broader term here as to what the Constitution really speaks to when it comes to the immigration issue from a federal standpoint, and take it from there.
Yeah, man, there's basically two places you can look to for immigration in the Constitution. The word is naturalization in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 4. And let's talk about that one first, then maybe we can go to the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment was dealing really specifically with former slaves who were being denied citizenship in the southern states. But what's really at stake right here is who gets to set the immigration policy. And that is given to the federal government in Article 1, Section 8. But the reason for that, if you go back to the founding era and you look at what these guys were saying to each other and what the issue was, Roger Sherman made it very clear in the Naturalization Act debate of 1790 in Congress, where he was talking about the reason we gave this power to the federal government was to prevent any one state from having really loose policies and the way they talked about it, forcing people on the other states that would be what they called obnoxious aliens, people that would be a drain on society, people that were there that they didn't want to be there, criminals, those types of things. And so he said to prevent one state from having really loose standards that then affected all the other states, we're going to allow the federal government to set this policy. So the idea was that the federal limitations or policies would be stronger, would be stricter than the states would do. We're getting the opposite today, of course. Now we have a federal government who's saying there are no rules. We'll let everybody in. That, of course, violates the spirit of what was meant by this clause in the Constitution. And it's one of the reasons the states are having to do the job themselves. I mean, Texas is working on it right now. Governor Abbott has sent troops down to the border. My friend Representative Brian Slayton has filed a bill to finish the wall in Texas. So states are going to have to step up here when you have a federal government that is failing in their duty to protect our borders.
Well, that's really interesting information here, Rick, and something that Republicans, I mean, we need to send this clip out to Republicans to say, hey, I mean, listen to what Rick Green is saying here, because in essence, you're making the constitutional argument for stricter border enforcement based on what the founders at the time were saying and what the gist was, basically. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think we've bought into this idea that the states have no role in this. It's entirely the feds. That's really a judicially created concept. The court gave the federal government what they called the plenary power over immigration, meaning that they had complete control of immigration. We didn't give that totally over to the federal government. Even when they put naturalization in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the states still had some say. In fact, they would sometimes refuse certain people coming across their state borders that they knew to be criminals or whatever the other case may be. And sometimes it was used in an evil way to prevent slaves and people of color from coming over. But that doesn't mean you can't use it in the right way, which is to prevent people that are harmful to your society. And so I think states have got to step up on this. I applaud Daniel Horowitz over at The Blaze. He has a great article on this a few weeks back that brings back the founders' quotes and gives that history on it. Guys like former Congressman John Hostetler, he's now at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, talking a lot about the state's roles in immigration. And I think it's going to be necessary. We're going to have to step up. We got a federal government now that their stated purpose is essentially to let everybody into the country. Look at this crisis on the border. They are hurting not only America, they're hurting these people that they have sent the signal to come to America. Everything's going to be fine. And now it's encouraged these cartels. The cartels are making a killing on this. The sex slave and trade is booming because of this. Biden's policies are hurting not just America, they're hurting the people that are trying to get here.
So, Rick, let me understand something from states' rights, from a states' rights issue as it relates to building the border wall. So if the Biden administration halts funding on the border wall from a federal perspective, but if Texas down there is trying to finish the border wall, like, how does that work from a constitution and legal standpoint?
It will be a constitutional fight, no doubt about it. I mean, if you go strictly by stare decisis, if you go only by Supreme Court decisions, someone, you know, you can make the argument, hey, this is none of the state's business. This is only the federal government's business. From a historical perspective and from an original intent of the Constitution, I think you have a great argument that the states have the right to protect their own borders. And that might even mean in the future having to have some sort of protection from other states. Now, we saw some of this with COVID. Look, if a state has the ability to require quarantine or to not allow someone in because they might have a virus, why in the world wouldn't a state have the right and the power to prevent someone in that they believe to be a criminal element or to be believed to be a problem? So I think we've got some really interesting constitutional debates coming up. Of course, most people would want that to be decided by the Supreme Court. I'm not like that. I don't think, you know, 5 out of 9 unelected, unaccountable lawyers in Washington, D.C. should have the final say on our law. The founders didn't think that either. So I actually believe it should be decided at a convention of states. Let all 50 states send representatives to a meeting and let them offer an amendment to the Constitution to take back some of this power and say, we in the states, if you feds are not going to do your job protecting our borders, we in the states have the power to do that.
Yeah, that seems to be the way to do it, for sure. So on from, not from a constitutional perspective, but just from a legal perspective, it seems like obviously the laws in America change as it relates to immigration and citizenship. You know, it just seemed like, you know, we've gone down a much more liberal path. I mean, back in the day where immigrants were coming in, Ellis Island and all of that, and now today it's totally different in terms of where America is, Rick.
Yeah, and think about the principles that should guide us on that. I mean, obviously, we want legal immigration. We
right.
want people to come to America and enjoy freedom. But the basic principle of just leaving your border open, letting anybody come in, is incredibly dangerous. Think about it on a personal level. I mean, you know, I obviously want to help people in my community or my state, but I'm not just going to open my front door and say anybody can come stay in my house. You know, that's not exactly protecting my daughter or my wife or my family. So there's got to be some rules. There's got to be some limitations. We've normally thought pretty common sense on that throughout our history. But what's the problem right now is you have people in Washington that want to have a one-party state, and they see unlimited immigration as helping the Democrat Party, helping them to somehow, you know, win elections, whatever their purpose and role is. It's bad policy. It's bad philosophy. It's bad for the Constitution and bad for the country.
Rick Green, always great to see you. By the way, you said the words common sense, but common sense in D.C. don't go in the same sentence up here.
Not lately, for sure.
All right, Rick Green, with the winner of the best Skype shot, by the way, in water cooler history. So thank you, Rick. Appreciate it. All right, when we come back, the last sip. I've got a few things to say about AOC, fossil fuels. Should I say these words? Farting cows.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. I love this segment because it is time for the last sip. I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't quite sure what segment we were in. That's full disclosure. I'm breaking the fourth wall. It's just you and me we're talking, okay? Because I was like, what segment are we in? Oh, that's right, the last sip. Okay, anyhow, that's between me and the production crew. We'll deal with it after the show. But you know what it's time for in the last sip? The poll of the day.
The water cooler. Poll of the day.
Poll of the day. Here we go. I'm going to talk just like the announcer. This is an interesting question. Which is more important to you, keeping the price of gasoline and heating fuel low or reducing America's reliance upon fossil fuels? Let's take a look at this. 52% say, hey, I'm really more concerned about keeping the price of gasoline and heating fuel low By the way, I'm in that group. Can we put it up to 53%? Madison, can we change that? Can we put it 53? Because I'm in that group. And then 38% say, I'm really more concerned about reducing America's reliance upon fossil fuels. And 10%, we always make fun of this group, 10% not sure. Hey, do me a favor. If you're part of the not sure group, like in other words, if you aren't sure about that question, email us, will you? thewatercooler@justthenews.com, or as we say in New York, thewatercooler@justthenews.com. That's a little bit smaller not sure percentage today. Look, I know fossil fuels, it's all the rage and the whole thing. I get it. AOC and cows that, how do I say this? Should I just say the word? Can I say this word? Can I say farting cows on the air? I just said it. But that's what, anyhow, don't get me started. Anyhow, I know the world's apparently going to end in like 13 years, she said. Or was it, it's probably now 12 or 11 years. Anyhow, so we've got about 10 or 11 years left of the show, and then we're done. That'll be the end of the run, according to AOC, unless we do something about clean energy, fossil fuels, and all of that. But here's the truth of the matter, folks. People care about gasoline prices. There's no doubt about it. And by the way, is it just me? And I know I'm just a simpleton, okay? But when Trump was president, it was like $2.19 a gallon. Now what is it? Madison, what are you paying? I'm paying $2.69 a gallon. $2.70, she takes the train. Madison telling me she takes the train, great. Okay, what are you paying in gas? The water cooler or the water cooler at justthenews.com. What are you paying for gas? And is it Biden's fault? Is it AOC's fault? Is it my mother's fault? Back in a moment. Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. It has been a wonderful show. Do you like how we compliment ourselves always on the show? Because, hey, we're great. Speaking of great, hey, look who's here, Anna Perez. Anna Perez, great to see you.
Hey,
again.
Great to see you too, David.
Real America's Voice correspondent. Yep. So tell me, what are you corresponding on specifically? Not from a letter standpoint or an email. I just want to know, what news are you working on today?
Well, here's an interesting piece of news for you. Representative Greg Murphy from North Carolina just presented some legislation yesterday that would actually move 95% of the National Guardsmen surrounding the Capitol to the border, which, you know, you think about this, you know, how this would have compared under the Trump administration. This never would have happened because this never would have had to happen.
Right.
I mean, first of all, what were they doing there to begin with surrounding the Capitol? I think there were like up to 5,000 troops at one point. And you have to wonder, you know, A, what were they doing there? But also, why do we have to do that through Congress? Why can't the Biden administration take the lead on intervening in this crisis that we're seeing at the border right now?
Yeah, unbelievable. And as we heard earlier in the show, we had Russ Vought on, the former budget director, who had found the money for the wall and said what the Biden administration is doing is a violation of the law. And we can get into that another time. Well, what else are you working on? Because I heard something about China. Can you tell me something about China?
Yes. So
I have a bad memory, so I don't know.
There's a Pew Research poll that just came out that said that 89% of Americans actually see China as an enemy rather than a trading partner, which, you know, you think to yourself, well, yeah, obviously. But I just think that's interesting because, you know, after we elected a president like, you know, Joe Biden, who hasn't been, you know, as America first as President Trump, you have to wonder, you know, do Americans really support his policies, or was it just like an anyone but Trump thing, you know, as far as the Democrats go, which is sad to see because, you know, you're missing a lot of these America First policies that Trump presented to Americans. He was really hard on China, and that was the first time we had really seen that, you know, in a long time. So, you know, it goes to show, do Americans really support any of Biden's policies at all, or was it all a PR thing?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And by the way, if it wasn't for Trump, you know, that number, 89%, I mean, it was Trump, like you said, that pointed all of this out to begin with about China, for sure. All right, Anna Perez, great to see you.
Thank you. Thanks all for having me.
Anna Perez will be back on the show quite often with us. And so will I. Sorry to break the news to you. By the way, we're at 3 o'clock Eastern time every single day. And if I do the math, that's 12 Pacific time. I don't know. I wasn't great at math. Tomorrow on the show, who's it again? Joe Kent. I'm asking who's on the show. The former Congressman Joe Kent will be here. Brian Gibson as well, talking about, of course, Judeo-Christian values. That's what we do on the show, culture war, politics. See you.